Hello and welcome to the Sydney Institute podcast. The Institute is Australia's premier current affairs forum. Every week, contemporary political, social, cultural, and economic issues are explored at the Institute through dialogue and discussion. This podcast was recorded recently at a members' forum in the city of Sydney. Thanks for listening, and for more information about the Sydney Institute, please visit www.thesydneyinstitute.com.au. We hope you enjoy this event.
Well, thanks for coming along tonight. We've got a slightly different microphone, so I hope it all works well. Can you hear down the back? Okay, that's great. That's okay. All right, no, they can hear. If you can't hear, let us know, but we have to replace it today. Thanks to Gambia Watts, who's one of our associate members, who told us that Embassat Khan was going to be in Sydney at this time. So we put this on at very late notice because it was the only time we could fit into our program. But it's great to have Ms. Khan here today. So I'll introduce her briefly. She's been active for a long time and was associated with Benatia Bhutto for many years. But in recent times, in what is a long CV, so I'll be brief as always, in the last 8 years, she's been a member of the Pakistan Muslim League in the Provincial Assembly of Punjab, and also in that assembly, a member of the Committee on Information Technology. So in Australia, of course, we've always been interested in the subcontinent, and it's great to have someone of this background here today. So Ms. Khan's going to talk for us on the broad topic of Pakistan today, and so the talk will go for about 30 minutes or thereabouts, and then we'll take questions and discussion. So Embassat Khan, you're very welcome. Thank you. And I should also welcome one of the youngest members of the audience as we've met. Young Ms. Khan. Joanne, there's a seat up here. Okay.
Thank you for inviting me, and thanks everyone for being here. I think through me you'll be able to experience a side of Pakistan you might have not yet. Also thanks to Mr. Gambir Watts for making this happen. To start this off, my name is Embassat Khan, and I have been an MPA for the past 8 years. I was born in Lahore, to parents who migrated from India. I am the granddaughter of Khalilur Rahman, who lost his life in the big war of independence in 1947. See, what is Pakistan? Let me try to explain. We are 63 years old, very young for a nation. Let me today focus on what's good we have. So I'm going to spotlight on growth, which will make us and the world around us better. Our birth was very violent, and I strongly feel we are still suffering from it. We are 180 million people, all under a very small roof, much smaller than Australia, I tell you. We have a very tolerant, open, and liberal constitution, with full rights for minorities and all religions. We have a democratically elected government and are constantly influenced by the world around us. We have beautiful geography with huge rivers and world's highest peaks. Pakistan today is suffering with its image. What we are today is not who we are, but the image that has been decided and projected for us. We are trying to find a way to build and realize the right image for us. What is that right image, and how projecting it properly can we build a stronger, more secure nation? Well, we have to have better health and education plans, promotion of arts, empowerment of women, and ratification of poverty. All roads must lead to education and health. As far as problems we face, we have no social security. We have no enforced intellectual property laws. Our economic growth is slow because our challenges are enormous. Today we have suicide bombers targeting kids in school, the forces of Pakistan and innocent families threatening our way of life. We have been in a state of war for over 40 years with external elements. And now we are all wrapped up in this war against terror, which started in Afghanistan and is now at our home on our streets. The people were never told about coming of this war, and it took us all by surprise. This has made the masses very insecure. And we still continue to fight and want to be better. I admire the courage. There is a vacuum in leadership and heroes, and we are concerned about this. We need heroes like Nelson Mandela and Martin Luther King. There is no infrastructure for creativity and its promotion. We don't have huge film schools or music schools. Through education, one gets aware, and it brings vision. A lot of focus needs to go into this area. Recently, people have ceased to feel secure on the streets, not because of the random crime, but the terrorist activities. This hinders everything. Our tourism is dying, and it is a pity because we have some of the world's most beautiful geography. Population growth is a huge issue which brings on big burden on infrastructure, resulting in lack of electricity, gas and water. I personally don't focus on what's bad. I think about what is good and how to make it better. In the past 12 years, we have achieved a lot in terms of stabilizing democracy. Women of Pakistan are playing a role in every sector, such as the parliament, the education system, human rights, political activities, medical and health center, and the rural women are playing an amazing function in the fields. Our society respects women and their courage. In our homes, women play a very dominating role. We are one of the few countries that have had a woman as head of state, and it is sad that we lost her. In 2005, after the earthquake, we saw our nation come together. People volunteered and displayed genuine honesty and courage. Hundreds of thousands of young men and women got on buses and trains to get to the affected areas and help night and day. The nation became one. So we do have character and caring elements. We just need to promote and highlight that. In years to come, Pakistan will go through a massive building process, and we are very excited about this. As soon as this war is over, we have a beautiful challenge to provide infrastructure, to build bridges, roads, and connect our cities like you have connected yours. We have to build bigger, better schools and hospitals. Our railway needs modification. We have to build airports, and our tourism industry will wake up to a brighter day. Child security is a huge concern. We have to provide better care for our kids and elders alike, and we hope to eradicate disease and premature deaths. We are blessed with a very tolerant religion, and we can, through education, highlight the goodness of Islam to the people. We have to make exemplary moves to acquire the credibility as a nation. We have brilliant agricultural prospects. Pakistan is similar to California and is loaded with minerals, oil, and natural beauty. Everything grows there. We have an abundance of farmlands and got hard-working people generating crop after crop amidst all this chaos. We got the most beautiful and unexplored real estate, from the beaches of Balochistan to the K2 base camp. No other country enjoys such diverse geography, and we are thrilled to visualize a day when we are able to enjoy it all and have it for others to experience it as well. We cannot wait to show you how good hosts we are. We know how to put our heads together and work diligently, and we need to exploit this goodness to bring about miraculous results. Our foreign policy will become more specific and tolerant. There is a lot of room for growth. We are surrounded by amazing nations, and once things stabilize in Afghanistan, we will grow exponentially. We have learned a lot from China, and we admire the skill China displays. We look forward to improved relations with India. The similarity among our nation is a blessing, and we will use it to sort out all our differences. I was blessed to have received Sikh Yatris who come for the yearly pilgrimage to Lahore. I am proud of this heritage. I respect their religion, which is purely based on peace. There is also huge potential in exports and heavy industry. People of Pakistan want to work and work hard. It is our commitment to provide them the infrastructure they need to grow. It really is all about the environment that has to be created for the nation to build itself. Environment is everything, and we recognize that. Progress may be slow, but it sure is on from where I am coming. Another big project under consideration is housing. With the massive population boom, we face an enormous challenge to provide shelter to the poor. It is tough, and once we finally find answers and put them in motion, we'll be glorified. Pakistan is a challenge. We are facing it head on. We are the dwellers of the subcontinent, a region known for its culture, food, abundance, and spirituality. We need to rekindle this spirit and move on passionately, holding on to strong principles our forefathers taught us, the principles that have been blurred by hunger, death, destruction, poverty, natural disasters, and endless wars. Our advantage is our people, and the land will live on. And the key to good people is to provide them with education and planting seeds of tolerance. It takes time, but it does happen. In terms of sports, we have shown good promise. A secure home provides the mental strength required for athletes to do well. We lack in mental strength solely because of the everyday chaos we face. The insecurity at home makes it hard to focus and be the best. In the parliament, we are doing legislation for a better Pakistan. A lot of bills have been passed, such as the bill against domestic violence, and many more are under process. We as parliamentarians believe that implementation of a bill is real achievement, and we are working towards it. Since the birth of Pakistan, these are the first 8 years for a continued democratically elected government. Let me show you how it grew. First, 88 to 90 for 2 years, 90 to 92 for 2 years, 93 to 96 for 3 years, 97 to 99 for 2 years, 2000 to 2007 for 5 years, and 2008 to now. So we are persisting. We can make it last longer with governments completing their 5-year tenure, giving us the required time to implement laws and legislations. This will enable us to provide security for the masses. We are in process. Every day is a mission. We also have been fighting for consistency in democracy, freedom of speech, human rights, free media, and women empowerment. And to make it all just a big bit complex, we are also involved in the war against terror. Our plate is pretty full. But the blessing is that it's these types of challenges that once overcome will make a nation of character. No humans have ever achieved greatness without hurdles. We just have to be clear in our vision and have to instill it in the people. Human race loves betterment and security. It is the default for us, and it is natural. We just have to head towards it and promote it. Everyone should carry this vision in their minds. Like any crop, we have to sow these seeds for a yield. Since Pakistanis are all natural farmers, it it is not hard to make them understand the phenomena. As far as diversity in Pakistan, we have about 25 languages in the region. With each of these languages come a unique culture, understanding, awareness, interpretations, and set of challenges. Big awareness is required to make it all harmonize, providing a fair platform that satisfies all culture within a mainframe is not easy, but it is doable, and we are improving on this every day. We face regional problems. Kashmir is an example, and it has been a flashpoint. Kashmiri families live in Pakistan, and when things go wrong in their homeland, we bear the consequences. Pakistanis living in the tribal belt also have relatives in Afghanistan and are affected emotionally and physically by what goes on there. And saddest of all, a lot of us have relatives in India. Going to war or even war-like situation or atmosphere means intense depression. We are home to millions of Afghan refugees, and we have tried to accommodate them as best as we can, given the resources we have. We had a war in 1965 and then another in 1971, in which we lost half of our land. The Russian-Afghan war brought a lot of chaos. We had another war with India recently on Kargil. Before we were ever able to re-stabilize and reorganize, we got engaged in this war on terror. This is like staying underwater too long without oxygen. And the current state of affairs display the picture of a tired and worn out nation. A nation that hasn't had a good night's sleep for over 40 years is really craving for relief. The constant bombardment of chaos has left us battered, and we are clinging to hope for a better future that seems far and distant. This turmoil has to give way to courage, passion, and with persistence, we hope to find the right way for us. To make it all a bit more intense, we are a nuclear nation. It had to be developed as a deterrent, which means that we had to go to extreme measures to ensure our security and survival. And now that we have it, we have to protect it. I must say that I salute the armed forces of Pakistan for their commitment, vigilance, courage, and sacrifice. It has been rough for them, especially when it is hard to recognize the enemy. This is my first trip to Australia, and I am really delighted by the infrastructure, diversity, and tolerance. I think our nations can learn a lot from each other, and I hope Australia can play an active role in the rebuilding of our country. I like the principles Australia is based on, and I feel a sense of spirituality when I move around here. I also admire the efforts taken to take care of the indigenous community here, and I would love to see an indigenous delegation visit Pakistan. Maybe we can organize a cultural exchange. An exhibition of their craft in Pakistan would be awe-inspiring. I recently heard the voice of Geoffrey Grumel, and it moved my soul. I would also love to bring him for a concert in Pakistan. Just the thought of this type of exchange is very exciting, and it truly would be global fusion. As I watched the amazing fireworks on New Year's Eve, my only wish was that one day my own country will enjoy such skills and prosperity. I would also like to thank Australia in helping us restore 2.5 million people who were displaced in the Valley of Swat during the War on Terror. So like I said earlier, it comes down to education and awareness. I can assure everyone here that the future looks much better than the present, and we are aware of the changes that need to take place in Pakistan. The road may be long and hard, but we can count on miracles, spirituality, and exponential growth to make it all happen. Like Martin Luther King said, "I have a dream." We are in process. Thank you. Thank you everyone for your time. Let me take
many thanks. I should have mentioned there's a husband down the back, another daughter down the back, and a brother up the front. As, the clans.
That's the most difficult part.
That's the most difficult. The brother.
The husband and
the husband and the brother. Okay. The kids are easy. Well, thanks very much for that. So I should say to there are probably a couple of new people here tonight, but your talk will be published in the Sydney Papers online shortly, and it'll be up on our podcast tomorrow. So thanks for that. Can I just lead off with a question, because you've got a very engaging background in Pakistani politics as you're a media advisor to Benazir Bhutto, and then of course you moved across to support General Musharraf. So tell us a bit about Mrs. Bhutto and why you saw your correct political leanings that it should move across to support Musharraf.
Well, it will have a
just talk to the back of the room.
Long answer.
Yeah, it's okay.
I've been associated with Benazir Bhutto for a very long time. But in 2002 general elections, when I saw that Benazir cannot come and rule in the country and we have her in absentia as a leader, I thought that since General Musharraf was supporting 33% women in the parliament, and he restored the seats of women in the parliament, and he, not only that, he was talking about district governments and enlightened moderation. So I thought we should not waste time and join him to make the government. So we gave him 18 National Assembly seats to form his government at that time.
Okay. And tell us a bit about Mrs. Bhutto.
Yeah.
What was working with her like?
Well, she was a very kind woman. And it's sad that she's not there no more as a leader. There's a lot of vacuum. I joined her in 1990 as a political activist. I was a student. And I did this huge research on the political victims of the province of Punjab. And I presented my work to her at a dinner that I met her socially. And she goes, "Wow, you are so young, so beautiful, and you're doing this work. I must appoint you somewhere." So she made me the member of the council, Pakistan People's Party, in 1990. Then I kept on working for 2 years. Then she made me the Secretary General, Pakistan People's Party, to work right under her. Then she became the Prime Minister in 93. That was her second term. So I also always had her blessings, and whatever I wanted to do for women, whether I wanted to do for tourism, whether I wanted to get involved in media, she was always there. And because of knowing my skills with the media, she shifted me to media in 1996 as the media advisor. And she made me her media advisor, but it was sad because she was not in the country and she was not available all the time to us because she went into exile in 1997, February. In 2002, I caught her. I met her many times later on in Dubai and London, but not in Pakistan because she never came back. So I called her in 2002 and asked, I used to call her Bibi. So I asked, "Bibi, what do you say about me now?" And she said, "You'll be going for elections." So that was the reward I got from her in 2002. And it was sad that I left her party in a way. But at the same time, it was really required, because to form Musharraf's government, it was required to be with General Musharraf. He was fighting this war against terror. He was putting women into empowerment. He was giving us a lot of facilities, and Benazir was not there. She was not present. So we switched parties and formed our government.
Thanks. to that. So,
when the terrible Mumbai terrorist attacks happened in Wago, there was a lot of tension between India and Pakistan. Have things improved, and has that kind of built any bridges? Because you also have the same terrorist problem.
Well, we are all the time trying to build these bridges, and I hope no other attack happens now, because if there would be one, again Pakistan will be blamed. So we have to defeat the terrorist. India should defeat the terrorist in India, and we should defeat them in Pakistan to have a smoother sailing for both the countries. Otherwise, this blame game will never get over. You know.
But have you built channels for better communication?
Yes, yes.
Do you talk about that at all, or is it too...
No, we are talking about that. And like I said, we are relaxing our foreign policy a bit more. And we want to have cordial relations with India. And it's our dream that for India, we should have no visa. And India should have no visa to come to Pakistan.
Yes, I know we're talking about Pakistan today, but if I can go back to the partition of the subcontinent, Frederick was a fairly haphazard method of drawing a line. Can you say how much that has contributed to your problems you're having today?
It's a question about the impact of the partition in 1947 over what were the problems in contemporary Pakistan.
Yeah, that's right. But it's been now 63 years, so we can't really go back and think about that. And we have to get with whatever we have. I mean, if I talk about it today, it'll be for longer hours, because we really didn't get nothing out of it.
Right, the question right down the back.
You mentioned a couple of challenges in the area of education and health. Certainly, a number of developed countries around the world that derive benefit from people who have grown up in Pakistan and stayed in Pakistan and sought their careers outside. What's your view about the developed world deriving the benefit of the people with skills in your country? Do you have a view on that?
Well, developed nations, if I get your question right, developed nations are enjoying life, and we do not know how to read. So there's a very big difference. And when I move around in Australia or London or Paris or Spain, I mean, these are the developed nations, America. It's not all about education. It's the freedom that you people have. It's the way you can live your life. We are not given that freedom. We are not given that life. Our kids have no security. We don't have the basics, you know. So it will be very hard for you to understand from where I'm coming. You know, you have to... And I'm sure if you come to Pakistan, you'll be all very sad to know the real state over there. You know, it's not an easy life that we are living.
Yeah.
Yes, I just wondered, you said you're making the nuclear part of Pakistan really secure, but is it seriously secure? I mean, if you can have suicide bombers...
The question is, how secure really is the Pakistan nuclear arsenal? Right.
Well, the nuclear arsenal is very secure, but the person on the road is not. That's the price we are paying, that we have suicide bombers. And to tell you the truth, these bombers are not Pakistanis. We are not that brave. I don't know, they are not humans. Because, I mean, they put a life jacket on and they just get into, I mean, any place. I don't know whether they are brainwashed or they don't know what they are doing or drugged or I don't know. But it's happening all the time.
Stefan Kirk-Sherry.
You mentioned the war on terror. Can you elaborate on any particular strategies that the government is following, or are there any government policies in terms of counter-radicalization?
Well, the government has been very unstable in the past years, so the army is taking care on the war on terror, basically. The strategy and the policy is made by the armed forces of Pakistan, and yet it is our mandate, so we say yes to it. So we don't make these policies on war on terror. It's the armed forces who make these policies. And they are very controversial, and as people's representative, if I say that the drone attack is with my consent, then I lose my elections, and all my life I'll never be a parliamentarian.
This question right down the back. I'm sorry, yes.
The US-Pakistan relationship seems particularly important in this region. I'd be interested if you could say something about the relationship from the Pakistan government perspective, positive and negative.
Well, the U.S. is playing a very prominent role in the war against terror with us. And there are times when we suffer with it as people in Pakistan, because people don't like interference. But at the same time, I think we need them. We cannot fight this war alone.
Okay, just a variation on that. The U.S. amongst the general population viewed as friend or foe at the moment?
No, not friend.
Right. And maybe just a further step on the US-Pakistan relationship, the Afghan-Pakistan relationship. Your thoughts on that?
That didn't hear down the back. The answer, not friend, was in relation to the general population, right?
Yeah.
So your second question, Craig?
Just comment on the
Pakistan-Afghanistan relationship.
Yeah, with US, it's a different culture, different language, different feel altogether. But with Afghanistan, we've got Afghani families related to us. So we give that margin to them, and we are friends with Afghanistan, and we are trying to build better relationships. And the masses are in favor of having better relationships with Afghanistan. But because the masses and the people are not educated, and they have not visited America, they don't know what they are talking about. They think these white people come and they draw policies for us and they kill our young folks and go back, you know. So it's hard for them to understand also. And they don't enjoy cultural or geographical or, you know, relations with America. So it becomes very hard.
Right down the back, please.
I'm interested in the national government's income and expenditure. Your national budget, is it generally in deficit? Is it generally in surplus? Is it between the two? And long term, is it moderately balanced?
It's moderately balanced. That's the best answer I can give you.
right, question there.
President Zardari, his position is pretty precarious. Is he under threat? Is the government stable with these movements to possibly try them for corruption?
Well, President Zardari, I must say, I'm a great fan of his. And President Zardari has been into jails and political victimization and political struggle because of the wife he had. Now, President Zardari had no option but to fight for presidency because his party was in the government and he had his own prime minister. So when he went for elections, the four provincial assemblies elected him, and then the National Assembly elected him without any delay. So that means that the elected representatives of Pakistan elected President Zardari, good, bad, corrupt or not, whatever, with their own will. So he's been elected and he's in office for the next 5 years. 2 years have gone, 3 more to come. So, and I'm not in his party, so I'm generally telling you what he is. And he's seen a lot of hardship, and he's gone through a lot of pain himself. He's been tortured in jail. We used to go visit him in jails, in hospitals, everywhere. But because he's got this campaign of character assassination following him everywhere he goes, you know, they win. But I don't think he'll be tried. I don't think he'll be... Because nothing has been proved. In so many years, they could not prove a single thing against him.
Going back to education, some of the problems with the fanatics and those who are enculturated or taught has come out of some Pakistani religious enclaves. Madrasas, whatever. Has the Pakistani government moved to do anything about trying to monitor what kinds of teachings or indoctrination or whatever is going on inside the madrasas?
Well, as for, there are no Saudi madrasas, there are Pakistani madrasas. And you know, there is a mosque, like you have the church, and in the mosque, whoever is an orphan or do not have bread and butter or is poor, you accommodate them, that becomes a madrasa. In that madrasa, they teach Holy Quran. They don't teach how to use a weapon. But sadly, in the name of madrasas, terrorist activists started teaching these small young boys terrorist activities, not to all Pakistanis only, but to all these who have penetrated in Pakistan. Because the Pakistani would be the last one to go to a Pakistani home as a suicide bomber. We love our country, we love our people. But we have external element, and we have people who have penetrated through the borders, through everywhere in Pakistan, to be trained by terrorists. And to tell you the truth, the actual terrorist is age between 12 to 15. So what can a kid of 12 to 15 think or plan or advise or, you know? So usually when we find their heads or their bodies or their, you know, limbs or whatever after the bombing, it's usually 12 to 15 years, not less than 12. Less than 12 maybe, but not more than 15 years. So we are doing a lot in our education policy for the... We are watching the madrasas. We are... A lot of licenses have been cancelled. President Zardari has faced a lot of threat from the mullahs. He's always under threat. And these days he's... Because he's cancelled a lot of licenses to given to madrasas to teach kids, you know.
Now, there's a question down there. Yes.
Thank you for a really encouraging talk. I'm just wondering if you could explain how religious the Pakistani population is and how, in your opinion, that would affect progress?
Well, you can be as religious as you want to, because Islam is very progressive. It's not the way it's been portrayed. It's where I'm a Muslim. So as far as that you said, is concerned for, you asked about education.
For example, Iran is considered an Islamic nation, but the people are not very traditional. So to what extent are people in Pakistan treated traditional?
Well, they are. They are very traditional, and they want to educate their kids and want to be better, and they are religious, but they are not fundamentalists. They are not extremists. They are very moderate. But the major population of Pakistan is illiterate. So they don't know either this way to go or that way to go. So we have to give education to make them aware so that they choose the right direction, which surely will be progress.
Now, we had a lot of questions, so I think we're getting close. If I missed anyone, tell me who I've missed. Oh, it's down there. Yes, yeah. And here we've missed. Yeah, right there.
Thanks very much for your presentation. You mentioned briefly the Kashmir. I know that's been a flashpoint.
allegedly because Pakistan supports the insurgents, whatever you want to call them, in Kashmir going for independence from India. What's the current situation there, and how do you see Kashmir being resolved?
Well, one view is that the Kashmiris should decide for themselves. That is what I believe in. But Pakistan foreign policy says, because we've got Azad Kashmir as well in Pakistan, where we have Kashmiris living in Pakistan, the foreign policy say we should sit down together with India and decide for Kashmir, with Kashmir having a consent in it. When the Kashmiri people say that we don't want to, sometimes they react to India and want to solve it sitting with us because we share a common religion. And they are Muslims. And we have, because of relations, we are emotionally tied to each other as well. Lot of them live here, lot of us live there. And that was the only reason that Pakistan supported freedom fight in Kashmir. Not because of the borders or not because of the area, but because of the relations and the bondage that we have with Kashmiri people. You know, like if my aunt is dying there, I'll surely go to see what is happening to her, you know. So, but I don't think Kashmir will have any solution unless India is involved, Pakistan is involved, and Kashmir is involved in itself. They have to all be involved because they've been involved for a long time in this mess together.
So there's someone down here. Yes.
Okay. Can you tell us a little bit more about the media situation in Pakistan?
Well,
free are the media.
Thank you for asking that, because I've been working in the media for years. Well, we had a very conservative media. Before 2002, we had just the print media, no channels, no cables, nothing. Thanks to General Musharraf, he introduced this huge media campaign, and he brought in a lot of channels for us. Every newspaper now has three or more channels. Now it has become a problem. Because every issue is highlighted, every accident is highlighted. We have no entertainment, we have no talk shows, we have no dramas going on, but it's just news, news, news. And they cover everything in a very brutal way, you know. They will show bloodshed, they will show suicide bombing, they will show body parts. So media has gone completely bizarre, I tell you. Yeah. But it's an open media. And they have an access to everything now. And the media men are becoming heroes. And the day is not far when they are going to fight for an election, because they are now, you know, known everywhere. They're very popular with the masses.
We've got a few of them here. A few journalists are being politicians here. Now, who have I missed? Have I missed anyone I haven't called?
Here.
I'll call it, Simon. Okay, Simon, since you're so upset. Okay, so you take over. Yeah.
Okay, can I ask two?
Yeah, sure.
That makes three. Two short ones, son.
Okay, very quick. President General Musharraf, what is the general feeling about him, and how do you think history will treat him? Question number one. Question number two, 50% of Pakistan's history has been military government, 50%. Civilian, more or less.
Less than.
What is the situation now? Is the military in barracks for good, or are they about to emerge, or will they emerge fairly?
We'll make sure they stay in barracks. And I don't think there are any chance for them to come back, because we've gone through a very bad patch in the last year. And if they stayed there, then they're staying there for a long time, I tell you. And about General Musharraf, history will remember him, because this continued democracy, democratically elected government, the continuation, he has given it to us. Women empowerment, he has given it to us. Freedom of speech, he has given it to us. Free media is the achievement he got for us. So history will remember him, But he has no chance to become the president again, I tell you.
Thank you.
Well, I think that's probably a good spot. We've had a lot of questions. I think we'll end it there. It's a fine at the time. Just take a seat. So I'm grateful to Gambier Watts, and I didn't pronounce his organisation because I was a bit nervous of the pronunciation, but it's a Gandhi-inspired organisation called Bhavan Australia. Is that pretty right? Where is he? Ah, Bhavan Australia? It's got something in front of it, hasn't it? You tell us.
Yes, Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan.
Yeah.
Bharatiya means Indian, Vidya means knowledge.
Okay.
The House of Indian Knowledge.
The House of Indian Knowledge, so there we are. So that's a not-for-profit, an NGO based in Sydney, so thanks for that. I'll be very brief, as I always am. The Australian-Pakistan relationship is a very important one. Obviously, Pakistan is an extremely important nation. It's a nuclear-armed nation. It's an ally of the West, it's a friend of Australia, and as Ms. Cowan's pointed out tonight, it's in the forefront of the war on terror, and that affects all of us, whether we're Pakistanis or Australians, or people living in the West, or people living in India, or wherever else. So I'm very grateful that you found time during your visit to Australia to come and tell us about Pakistan today, as you saw it. You've been very frank, and we're very grateful for that. You've covered all the questions you were asked, and you've responded frankly, and we're very grateful for that. I'm sure you're going to be back here again, and you're most welcome, you and your husband and your brother and the kids. All of whom will be a bit older, I'm very grateful we fitted you in, and I'm very pleased we did. So thanks for that tonight, and for an important address on a very important nation. Thank you.
You have been listening to the Sydney Institute podcast. This podcast is proudly brought to you through the support of Microsoft Australia. We hope you enjoyed listening and can join us again soon.